there are many intermediate technologies, but the whole world is shifting to AI. I'm talking to somebody in Europe or another part of Africa, you know.
I'm just going to ask you, like, this happening was unthinkable, I think, a few years ago,
completely,
right?
Unthinkable. But typically the challenge with that is, yes, I need a little bit of money. That was provided. But a lot of the times is I don't, and that connects about 3.5 million students and staff across our region.
Wow, that's a huge number.
Yeah.
Technogram focuses on latest technologies, solutions, and their potential to transform customer operations while enhancing partner businesses. The episodes include insightful sessions on reimagining the digital future.
Welcome to Technogram by Reddington. For today's episode, we have Professor Madara Ogot, who is the CEO of UbuntuNet Alliance. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
We are very glad to host you here today. And this is not your first time to Dubai, is it?
It's actually my first time into Dubai, even though I have flown through Dubai very many times.
Oh, is that so?
Okay. But never left the airport.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you've landed yesterday?
Last night,
yes. Yeah. How was your experience so far?
Hot.
You've not come at the right time.
No. Otherwise, fantastic, yeah. But it's quite warm outside.
You must definitely come back in the winter months.
Absolutely.
It's really nice as well.
Absolutely.
So can you tell us a little bit about UbuntuNet Alliance and the role that the institution is playing in advancing research and education?
Okay, yeah. UbuntuNet Alliance is a membership organization of NRENs, that is National Research and Education Networks, in Eastern and Southern Africa. That's important to note because we are owned by the NRENs themselves.
Right.
That are in these various countries. Our main mission in the first hand is to be able to provide broadband connectivity to universities at an affordable cost. Every time I talk about we or us,
yes,
I refer to UbuntuNet and the NRENs as a group.
Okay.
In all the individual countries. The members own the fiber optic network that we run that connect them to each other, but also to NRENs around the world, but also to the commodity internet. The key issue is that to be able to provide learning materials, research infrastructure, access to be able to process your data for students and staff in universities across our region, you need high-speed connectivity.
For sure.
And you need the attendant services that run on that connectivity. So by pooling our collective resources together, by pooling our demand together, from all the different countries, we're able to get our network running at much lower cost. And that is passed on directly to our NRENs, who pass it on directly to universities. Just to give you an idea of scale, we connect a little over 1,900 institutions across our region. And that connects about 3.5 million students and staff across our region.
Oh, wow, that's a huge number.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so how old is UbuntuNet?
UbuntuNet goes all the way, it's about 11 years, sorry, I take that back, it's about 13 years old now.
Okay.
And it was initially formed by four of these NRENs who already existed, but had no means of connecting to each other.
Okay.
And so the initial idea was, how can we connect together? They then approached the European Union, or the European Commission, seeking for funding to be able to expand beyond themselves. The Commission has supported the Alliance for the past 13 years, and that has enabled us now to be in 16 countries that are connected to the network, and also 16 countries where NRENs are present. I'd also like to mention that in as much as the European Commission has supported us at the secretariat level, the World Bank has supported the NRENs, or a lot of the NRENs, through their governments.
Interesting.
So we build the network that connects the NRENs, and then the World Bank, through support, is able to help NRENs build the internal network that connects institutions.
So you just going back to a little bit about what you said, who were the founding NRENs?
The founding NRENs were Renu of Uganda, Kenneth of Kenya, Tenet of South Africa, and RedNet of Rwanda.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is how you're enhancing connectivity, research, and collaboration. Is this by working with all these entrants across?
Yes. I mean, the idea is this. If I'm able to communicate with you, share data with you, work on collaboration tools with you,
mm-hmm.
on our own network, so we don't incur cost, we don't limit the amount of data that can be transferred. It's just the speed that it can be transferred at. And therefore, this encourages a collaboration where previously it would be very difficult to collaborate because you're limited by the capacity that you have, you're limited by the costs that you have. So the goal here is to be able to encourage researchers within our region, but also with the rest of the world, to be able to collaborate, not just for research,
mm-hmm.
but also for educational purposes.
Okay.
Of course, COVID brought the whole idea of collaboration to the forefront.
Yeah, must have accelerated the process.
When that's become standard. But it's become so routine now only because the networks exist,
mm-hmm.
which allow you to be able to you know, I don't talk to somebody in Europe or another part of Africa. You know, it's just quick, let's have a Zoom call. It's almost second nature now.
Right.
If those broadband networks weren't there, mm-hmm. you couldn't do it.
Okay.
Right? So it's enabled so much in terms of collaboration between researchers, not just within country, but across the world.
Can you share some success stories or any impactful initiatives that has been spearheaded by UbuntuNet?
Yes. And again, when I talk about UbuntuNet here, I just want to emphasize it's the Secretariat and the NRINs.
Yes.
A great example happened actually the year before, into the year of COVID,
mm-hmm.
In Renu in Uganda. Renu is the Uganda NRIN.
Right.
And there they had a collaboration with a university in the US. And they were able to do collaborative training of medical doctors for surgery over the internet. This is where the trainee doctors in Uganda were able to conduct different tests.
Mm-hmm.
And they were being supervised and guided by doctors in the US who could see what they were doing real time and advise them in real time on how to do some of those procedures. Again, none of this is possible unless you have broadband connectivity. Previously, those doctors had to fly in.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, like, this happening was unthinkable, I think, a few years ago,
completely,
right?
Completely unthinkable. And now, because of that, it's almost routine. Why fly in? I can do it online. So the flying in becomes now more of the exception,
mm-hmm.
than the rule that it was before.
Back in the day.
As well. Another example is that because the NRENs, again, have infrastructure, mm-hmm. both computing and connectivity infrastructure. Last year, there was a project between the University of Nairobi, UbuntuNet, and the University of Johannesburg. And the idea was to see if we can give small little grants to allow researchers in the region to develop AI applications that would support socioeconomic development. It was that open. But typically, the challenge with that is, yes, I need a little bit of money. That was provided. But a lot of the times is I don't have the infrastructure to do that research on. But now they're able to log in at their local university to their NREN. We have a GPU cluster hosted by Kennet in Kenya, able to do all their computing there and get their data back both in Kenya and South Africa to be able to develop some of these pilot applications. And again, these are something that only happen because we are sharing our facilities,
mm-hmm.
In an open way, therefore enabling researchers to be able to do work that previously they've not been able to do.
So what is your vision then for research and education networks?
The vision is not so much mine as a global vision.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit of that is already occurring, that the collaboration between researchers should not have any geographical boundaries. Researcher A in country A wants to collaborate with researcher B. They should be able to do so leveraging on the technologies that already exist. Some of them are the ones we have as a collective. Others, of course, we're like with AWS, would be outside that, but are brought into that network to allow this collaboration that previously was very difficult to do. That way, you can be able to pull minds together on a common problem,
mm-hmm.
not so much that they're restricted to the countries, the universities that they're within. So like minds can come together and say, let's work on this problem. And they don't have any restrictions because they're leveraging the technology that is there.
Yeah, I wanted also understand how can the entrants who are part of your alliance, right? How can they all benefit from your partnership with AWS and Redington? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is that many of the entrants have data centers that have computing capacity, storage capacity, a couple of them high-performance computing, et cetera. But that is limited. And the idea is that the relationship with AWS will complement that, not replace that. Because the capabilities are much more. And a lot of times a researcher needs, you know, superior capabilities or advanced capabilities for a short period of time. I may have a 6-month research project and I need this level of computing power, storage power, data processing power, et cetera.
So they wouldn't want to invest long-term.
So you cannot invest long-term for a lot of these short-term projects. And it's impossible to envisage all the different needs that one would have.
Right.
So the idea is, instead of trying to build your own, you can leverage on what AWS offers. And because the idea of pooling again comes in, and that's what this framework agreement brings. We are pooling our collective resources to bring the cost down for everyone. So that even if I am there for a short term, I'm not coming as an individual. I'm coming as this bigger group of institutions under their entrants, under the alliance. I'm able to get the services at a lower cost. I'm able to do computing, analysis, et cetera, which I would not have been able to do as an individual researcher or probably as an individual institution as well.
So what is your next step then in this agenda to accelerate this opportunity?
Okay. A couple of things we want to do is, like I said, we are many entrants.
Yes. How many are you today?
Interesting to 16.
Okay.
Stating the obvious, Africa is not a country.
Yes, of course.
Right? So the countries are very different. Mm-hmm. The entrants are very different. Some entrants are 100% private entities supported by government in terms of policy, etc. Other entrants are actually departments in government. So the next step is that now to move to the individual entrant level, find out what their needs are, how they want to approach this partnership, and tailor the agreement to that entrant. Okay. So you meet their needs and their institution needs, because every country's needs are different.
Okay, so how do you plan to kind of enhance your capabilities to do this?
One of the things we had is a few weeks ago, we had a call with all the entrants, as mm-hmm. well as with AWS. Several entrants expressed an interest in this. So they're the ones we're going to begin with first. In terms of us with AWS meeting the entrants, trying to determine how they want to operate within this framework agreement. As I said before, it is then tailored for them, and then now they can offer it. So our role as UbuntuNet primarily will be awareness to the end user, to the institutions. For example, if a university in Zambia mm-hmm. says, oh, I'm interested, our role is to say, go to Zamren, who's the entrant in Zambia as well. So at a continental or Eastern Southern Africa level, we will create awareness among institutions that these capabilities are now available to you at an affordable cost. At the same time, the entrants will be doing the same within their own countries.
Right.
And hopefully that will be able to bring up use of some of these technologies that researchers and students are not using currently.
So do you have like regular conversations with the governments of these countries as well?
We must have conversations with government. And the reason is the entrants all exist by courtesy of government mm-hmm. In one way or another. If you're fully private, the government still allow you to connect almost exclusively universities, which one would argue, well, they can all go to the market. The government says, no, we have an entrant. This is what they do. And you do get some special concessions from government. At the end of the day, our mission and the government's mission is exactly the same, mm-hmm. right? At the end of the day is to increase both education quality and research output of the students and staff in our various countries. So we always work hand in hand with government.
Okay, that's great. So I'd like to also know about your thoughts on how is the digital transformation journey kind of spanning out for these countries that you have partners with?
Say that again, sorry.
How is the digital transformation journey spanning out?
Okay, yes. Countries are out at different stages, mm-hmm. as one would expect.
Yes.
Some countries are way ahead of others. Virtually all countries in our region either have a digital transformation plan in various documents, mm-hmm. Or are preparing one mm-hmm. As well. Some have active programs. I'll give an example. Malawi, where we are based, they have a digital Malawi program of government. They've just finished phase one. They're now moving into phase two. Kenya has gone through the same. So we feed into these plans from the research and education component, as well as building the digital skills of students who will be the citizens out there using these digitalized systems that the government is preparing. And that's why saying that the work that NWENs do goes hand in hand with what the government is trying to do.
So in terms of the timelines, right? So 1 year from now, and then maybe a couple of years ahead, so 3 years from now, what do you think will be the different stages that these countries will be at? Or what are the things that we need to keep in mind?
Two letters, AI. And I bring that up because this is something where one of the benefits African countries have is you can lag behind, the new things come up, and you can leapfrog all the steps in between. There are many intermediate technologies, but the whole world is shifting to AI. This is an opportunity for us to jump immediately in. A lot of the tools that are required, the infrastructure that is required, AWS is able to offer. A lot of the training that is required, AWS is able to offer under this framework agreement for students and staff. So, and the good thing about something like AI, if you have the core infrastructure available, is it's purely brain power. Unlike the previous stages of development, where like manufacturing, et cetera, where you need huge outlays of money to build infrastructure, this is purely brain power. And this is an opportunity, therefore, for Africa as a whole, not just our region, to literally leapfrog and jump forward, leveraging on these technologies that are there, and also the smartness that they already have. Because a lot of the barriers that prevented them from getting to this point are now being dropped. And this partnership is one of those core areas to remove those barriers.
Okay, that's great. I also wanted to understand how partnerships, like what you just mentioned between AWS and Redington and Ubuntu.net, how are these kind of... So how's your partnership with AWS and Redington contributing to your goals?
Okay, our core goal as the alliance, like I said, is to support research and education. And everything else is what do we need to do to be able to do that. For the past 12 years, the focus has simply been on we need to provide connectivity at an affordable cost. We're almost reaching the stage where that has either been achieved and or the markets in these countries has reached a point where that is no longer a big issue.
That's interesting.
Right? And many countries have already reached there. Kenya, South Africa, etc., Uganda, where the telcos and the NRENs are at par. And so the question is now, what is riding on your network? So that is where we want to go. What services are you offering in the network? What can a student do in your network or faculty in your network? Now, the network connects you to all these different pieces around the world, AWS being one of them. So now I can readily access services. So the focus is no longer, can I connect? The focus is now, what I'm connected to, what can I now do? So you have moved from being able to do something because you didn't have the tools to do it, to now you do have the tools to do it. What can I actually produce? So the goals looking forward is now production. Not simply, one who said the lowest levels, but I need connectivity, and if you have connectivity, what are you going to do with it?
What are you going to do with it?
Beyond simply saying, I'm connected. Right. Yes, and these are the tools that AWS brings.
And how are you going to do it securely and everything as well?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. So when you're not wearing the cap of the CEO of Ubuntu.net, what do you do? What are some of your hobbies, and how do you spend your weekends?
Interestingly enough, my dad's a historian.
Okay.
He's a professor in history. He's 95 years old.
Oh, wow.
But when my dad hit 95 years ago, he decided that he wants to start working on urban history.
Okay.
And so he had two projects in mind. History of Nairobi, the capital of Kenya, and history of Mombasa, the port city in Kenya, which is a few hundred years old. Mm-hmm. But he needed a research assistant.
Okay.
And so I became his research assistant. And I never liked history.
Okay.
I just thought it was boring, just memorizing facts, etc. I said, fine, help him. He believes that he's the people who are born after computers.
Right.
So, but the beauty is this, is that, and I say this is what I'm doing outside UbuntuNet, is you begin to appreciate other things, mm-hmm. and it's rare that you have a project to do with your parent.
Of course.
Very rare. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I lied, 2020, the history of, year of COVID, History of Nairobi came out, and that was published, and then we spent another 2 years in 2023 last year, History of Mombasa came out. You know, and you look at these two things and...
That's amazing achievements, right?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. A lot of time, but it's relaxing for me because it has nothing to do with my daily work.
But do you kind of use any kind of technology to kind of get the data together?
I use technology 100%.
Of course.
Right? 100%. Because nearly all the information that you need is somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's behind a firewall, etc., but you can find it. Images going all the way back to the 1800s, 1900s, late 1800s, early 1900s, they're out there, just to find them. So you use the skills you learn here
right.
to be able to be a good research assistant
yeah.
And overwhelm him with data. This is wonderful, but now you have to put it all together. Mm-hmm. And again, use the same tools to be able to help you get the documents put together. In addition to, of course, physically visiting and taking pictures and talking to people. But technology was a core part of being able to get them done very quickly.
Okay. As a professor, do you have any go-to tools or tech software that you use?
I do. And I'll give a very simple example.
Okay.
When COVID came, many of my colleagues, that time many of us were not using learning management systems mm-hmm. if you're teaching a physical class. Of course, COVID came. Many universities were taking a little bit of time to get to a position where they have LMSs in place for students who are physically in class. I was able to set up a Moodle instance for the class I was teaching. I was at University of Nairobi teaching engineering. And it's simply because I was lazy, if I can use that phrase. To me, lazy means that you spend a lot of effort to get something running, but once it's running, you do less work. So what would happen is that for the LMS, set it up, that was not a big deal. Put all your class notes, all the slides, all the homeworks. And I was using Moodle. And in Moodle, I set up all my homeworks to be automatically graded. So that it took me a month or two of hard work. But once the semester begins, I need to give you this handout, that handout.
No.
The homeworks open automatically, close automatically, are graded automatically. There are no missing marks, give me my grade, etc. And
that's amazing.
Initially, the chairman was very skeptical, but was happy that I raise that story very often because I use it to convince other faculty members that yes, it's a lot of work to get it set up, as in any tool, but once it's set up, it's a better experience for the students.
And for yourself.
Everything is there.
Yeah.
And even for you.
Yes.
Everything is already there. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor. Very, very insightful takeaways from our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.